Hello and welcome to episode 105 of the MotorFreak podcast. We thank you for waiting for so long. We hope it's worth the wait because for 105, we're going to bring to you just a brief kind of episode series for the next couple shows to really help the new riders out there. And, you know, regardless of gender, regardless of what you ride or, you know, who you are, there's a lot
or
of
how tall you are,
how tall or how short you are. Just, you know, universal issues and concerns and ideas and things that we have for you if you're new to riding or you're considering riding and you're just not sure where to start, what to think about, and how to kind of sort through all the information that's available to you. And
or if you're trying to convert someone to ride, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your sister, your brother, and you kind of don't want to shoulder the responsibility on your own, this would also be something that might be good for you to listen to.
We're also going to cover universal topics that affect all riders of all ages and experience levels. If you've been riding a really long time, then maybe it's time for a new class. Maybe it's time to step back and look at how you're riding and what you're doing and see if you can make any improvements. Because we know that no matter how long you've been riding, there's always something you can improve or fix or maybe redo. So we think that, you know, the information that we have in store for you will be great for everybody. We're going to break down kind of, I guess, step by step things to think about and things to consider when you're trying to get into motorcycling, because there are so many things that might be running around and you've got many people telling you in both ears what to do, what not to do. And we're going to try to organize this for you a little bit so you can kind of sit down and figure out what's going to work for you. So
provide you with information to consider and, you know, as opposed to telling you what to do. Hey, this is our opinion. Consider it and make your own decisions.
Yeah. And I don't know. I would say that a lot of the info that we're going to talk about, it's pretty much everyone I think can agree on. These are things to think about and these are things to consider. But how you decide to take that information and what to do with it is could be up to you. I think we'll start with, what do we wish we could have done differently that, by the way, I think would have been in our control? I mean, if you started riding 30 years ago, there are things that you just didn't have available to you.
Resources.
Right.
Primarily.
You didn't really have probably the volume of classes that you could take today. I wish there were more bikes. I wish we had the availability of 200, 300, 400 cc bikes today. Back in 2000, when was that? 2003, 2004. It just wasn't available at all. That's what I wish.
So the good news is that you're coming into a market that is far more competitive with many options, and so there are a few more things to consider. So that's always helpful. For those of you tuning in from outside the U.S., our country does not have a tiered licensing system like in Europe and other parts of the world. So once you get your motorcycle credential on your license, you can purchase and ride whichever motorcycle you wish. Does not matter what CC. You can buy a scooter, you can buy a Harley, you can buy a Hayabusa. And obviously that kind of licensing definitely has some downsides, but for the purpose of this program, we want to educate listeners about getting comfortable on the road. And so you can kind of, apart from the licensing issue, you can kind of also benefit people from outside the U.S.
Shoot, in some states, you can just buy a motorcycle no matter where you're from. I know in California, I mean, when I used to work at the shop, you could have landed, at SFO from Italy, anywhere in the world, any country, you name it. And all you would need to present to purchase a motorcycle and leave is insurance and your identification. There was not any requirements for endorsements because you weren't a citizen or because you weren't a resident. So some states are very lax and they probably don't even check insurance. Like, I don't even know how common that is, because in California, your insurance is tied to your registration. If you don't submit insurance after you register, they'll cancel your registration and send you a nasty letter. But that's not true, I think, in most states. You can probably buy what you want.
And getting insurance in California is also tied to your experience. So I've never been in a position where they've asked me, how long have you been riding? And I'd said a couple of months. So there's also that to consider, how difficult it would be as a beginner. So we can't attest to.
Age, I think, makes a huge difference.
Yes,
though.
Also.
Age and gender, you'll be charged so much if you're 21 and you're a guy. You're buying like a $20,000 bike, or attempting to, you'll pay ridiculous insurance. It just depends.
Yeah,
depends on who you are.
Which is why we always advocate to start small
and save some money. But
start
a couple,
small, start used.
A couple other things that we found that people. Well, I think this is your one. This is your answer, right, Christy? You want to learn where it's saying you to learn the dirt first.
If I had to start all over again, and my start was because I wanted to get a license because I needed it as a means of transportation. If I started all over again, I would learn on the dirt first. And why that is there are a lot of situations, loss of control, loss of locking your rear wheel. Those kind of things happen on dirt. And when you've never experienced it and you're on the street, it's weird, but it'll also send you straight into panic mode because you're not used to this feeling and you might not have the kind of, instincts, at first to control that situation. But if you learn to ride in dirt and your back wheel is sliding out from behind you, it's really not as much of a, oh, okay, I know what's going on here. I just need to do, X, Y, and Z. So I think that was really primarily for some of the emergency situations. It's helpful to learn in dirt. But also, at least in the state of California, if you learn in dirt, you could be any age. You could be 5, you could be 10. You don't need to instantaneously jump to the street. So you have all up until, say, about 15 years old where you can access the dirt before you, want to worry about the street and get a license.
Also a nice soft introduction because,
crashing
on the dirt, you can absolutely get hurt. But your risk levels are a little different and they can be managed a little bit differently, I think, in a class.
Yeah, and there in Southern California, there are a couple of classes. Joanne's more familiar with one than the other. Both are sponsored by Honda and Yamaha. Coach to Ride and Gary LaPlante's Dirt First. They're both located in the Temecula Anza area, and both of them are dirt oriented, and the benefit of those classes, if you've never taken any class to ride, basically for one day you show up, you don't have to have any gear. You don't have to have a license. You don't have to have any experience. You just show up, they will outfit you. And for about $200 to $300, it's $200 at Coach to Ride. I have not looked at, the Dirt First Gary LaPlante, class. But they can do an introductory ride that's about an 8-hour class for $200, and you get everything. So if you hate motorcycling, if at the end of the day it's just not for you, you don't feel right, it just, isn't your thing, then all you're out is $200. You're not out the cost of a motorcycle, you're not out the cost of classes or license or anything like that. So it's a really good way to get your feet wet. To kind of see, I can get the hang of this. Yeah, I think with, a little time, I'll be more comfortable.
And keep in mind, those costs are also limited to certain states because it's free in Pennsylvania for residents. And other states, it's totally subsidized, like $50 or something. So just depending on your state, you might find a good deal somewhere like that.
Yeah, so if you want to learn in dirt, there are plenty of courses. These guys also train the whole family. So if you're you know, if you're mom or dad and you're kind of curious about jumping on a motorcycle and you have a 5-year-old or even, you know, 10, 15, what have you, you can do it as a family. I know that at Gary's courses, I think the youngest person they taught was 4. And obviously the bikes will be different. They have a huge array of motorcycles, some of which are automatic, but for primarily adults, you'll see the clutch. Maybe not so much for the dirt, but for the street versions, which is in not California, but other states, MSF or Total Control. Is that the company that took over?
Yeah, you can go, if you go to the Motorcycle Safety Program website for your state, that website will tell you everything about registering, payment, course offerings for your state. So msf-usa.org only gives you states that use their program. But in your state, usually it's something like PAMSP or CAMSP. So you just have to Google for your state and put in MSP or Motorcycle Safety Program, and you'll find the website for your state, and then it'll tell you everything about how you need to do it for your location, because it will vary now that less states are using the MSF curriculum. Like Pennsylvania and California are now using LeapArcs, but the licensing is still, I think it's still the same licensing, like written permit, and then the class will be your substitute for the road test. So you take the class and then you earn your driving portion without having to go to the DMV and do the circles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't changed. It's just what they're teaching you in some states.
So in the dirt classes, your focus is not for a license. Your focus is to just have fun and kind of get the hang of it and figure out whether or not this is something that you're going to enjoy. Once you cruise over to the street training courses, those are going to be like, I think it's 4 and 4 over a weekend. So typically Saturday, Sunday, 4 hours in a classroom to study curriculum and basic laws. And then 4 hours of putting all of that to
more than
good use.
About 15 to 20.
Sure. When I took it, over 10 years ago, that's roughly what it was. Obviously, more information will be on the website if you're curious. But roughly speaking, it was a two-day weekend, and you did equal parts class time as well as outside time in a parking lot. And they kind of get you acquainted with the clutch, with throttle, and obviously some tips and tricks is to not roll the throttle completely back when you're in first gear, when you first get on the motorcycle. So with those courses, the road test at the end that's handled as a part of the course, like Joanne said, would cancel out your need to do that for the DMV, which when I was taking it 10 years ago, there were quite a few people who had been riding motorcycles for about 10 years, and they took that class because, A, they did not own a motorcycle that could do easily a figure eight in a parking stall.
Or they didn't know how to.
Yeah, or B, it's kind of hard to do it on a Harley. It can be done, but you really have to have some good skills in order to be able to pull that off on a cruiser with a limited turning radius. But also, they were just a little stressed out with someone standing over them kind of, you know, clicking a pen and tapping their foot. So that class kind of provided them with a bit of an easier way to refresh and take those that portion of the course. And then you go into the DMV and take the written portion, and hopefully you have your license at that point.
I would suggest, too, if you're totally new to it completely and you've never really even touched a motorcycle, that you may actually want to look at the written portion of your motorcycle class first, just so you can get acquainted with some of the ideas about motorcycling, because your motorcycle handbook for your state, they're all different, and each state's going to write some kind of little driving handbook specifically for the motorcycle written portion. And you have to read that to pass the state's written portion, because it won't have anything to do with the curriculum of the motorcycle safety program in that state sometimes When I was still in the program, I read rumorings. I just heard things about trying to get the MSF curriculum to be completely covering licensing in the state rather than breaking it out where you have to do DMV for written and then you have to do, you know, the MSF for the driving portion. So look at your state, but, you know, at least if you look at the, I think if you look at the driver's handbook, at least you get just kind of a basic intro, but certainly the class will be the way you want to do it.
The booklet that your own DMV gives you for either driving or for riding safety, that's going to also have some really key terminology. There's one thing when Joanne and I are just talking amongst ourselves and we're trying to say things in a manner that people will understand. And then, as you all well know, with the DMV, there's DMV speak. And it's a little bit different. So conceptually, we can understand based on what we talk about. But once you see it with reference to some of the technical jargon that they use, it's always a nice little refresher. Every time I have to take my written portion of the driver's exam, which isn't often, but it has happened, I've gone back and read the book just to familiarize myself. Not saying I don't know the laws, but they just have this really weird way of phrasing things.
The other thing I wish we had, that I had back then, was more access to street classes on the track. And I'm talking about after you get your license, because really, yeah, let's be honest, your basic riding course is only to teach you the basics and the kind of your preliminary riding of how to operate your bike. It doesn't make you an expert, and it doesn't make you experienced enough, in my opinion, to ride a really big, fast, high displacement motorcycle proficiently and execute perfect cornering maneuvers and emergency maneuvers, right? It gives you the basics so that you can go and practice and start to get better. But I wish I would have taken...
It's also overwhelming.
It can be. I mean, there's just no... It's like you get your license and then that's it. Then you're left alone, kind of...
I was somewhere between very afraid and beyond stoked, and I was just barely registering what they were telling me. And then after the class was over, I was like, what did I just do again? What was it? Twist, left, lean? What?
Might not remember everything.
Implementation.
Necessarily. I mean, you'll go and practice, but I wish I would have taken an advanced street class on the track, because now there are a lot of schools who offer advanced street training, but they're using the track as a closed highway, so to speak, so that you practice things you'd ride on the road, and they're not designed, these courses are not designed for racing or competition. They're purely designed for skill, but in a safe place, not on your highway or not on your streets. So you're actually getting some more intermediate kind of next step training, and I think that would have been really helpful too for me to expedite my learning a little bit and kind of.
And in an environment that's a little more better. Sophisticated than a Costco parking lot.
Right. And interesting, because the racetracks have corners, and some have tight corners and some have fast corners, and they can emulate highway on ramps and big sweepers and tight hairpins. And it's a controlled, safe environment. So, I mean, imagine going out riding today without cars on the road. There are no cars on the streets. There are no pedestrians. It's like, imagine the city clears out everyone for a day, and the only thing out there with you are like 10 other bikes and two or three people who are training you. So I wish I would have done that way back when. Now there's multiple resources available, like Street Masters, like Ken Condon.
The class. The class training that you took.
Yeah, Reg Pridmore, his class training. There are so many schools now around the country offering these kind of next step courses after your MSF. So definitely look
MSF
at that.
MSF actually has an advanced training course.
They also have experienced.
Jason Pridmore has gone more to one-on-one training as opposed to providing a school. But
you can find a lot of one-on-one. There's so many other options now for that in between, where you're not totally new, but you're not necessarily feeling like you've figured out a lot on your own, or you maybe you're not getting it and you might need more one-on-one. But just thinking back to, for me, 2003, 2004, 2005, when I first started writing, I think at that point in my writing, I wasn't even thinking about traveling or touring or track days or anything like that at all, or even my next bike. Like, I wasn't even considering upgrading, or I just was so focused, I think, on just enjoying the Ninja and doing my daily commute rides in the city. I think it took me, I don't know, a year to leave the city. Like, we started riding in September, October of 2004. And I don't think I went on my first, like, highway ride until the following summer or something. Like, it took
me... How did it feel when you were riding in traffic? Can you remember what the first couple of times felt like?
Yeah, because my first couple of times were on my scooter. So I already had that nailed pretty much. It was just faster now and more fun. But I can remember on the scooter, it was scary. Yeah, it was really scary. And so I created a very small radius from our home in the Presidio, and I only stuck to riding in the park the first, I don't know, maybe few weeks, month, like in the park, just practicing in the big parking lots, practicing in the small neighborhoods, just all very localized. And then it took me like 3 weeks to leave the park and then go out to the city limits.
Yeah,
not
because
every part, but
in the beginning, you're all the literally there's voices in your head, but the voices in your first opportunity to ride are going to be during this course to tell you to, you know, use the clutch more, throttle back, only have two fingers, you know, use a rear brake. All these different things are getting shouted out to you. So now that you've removed yourself from that environment and you're trying to implement everything that you've learned, you're still going to be focused on, you know, where's the clutch? Am I floating my foot over the brake? Where's this? And it's really difficult when you interject yourself into an environment where there are these other things to consider. It's not just about you finding where the brakes are and shifting. It is now about the guy that is next to you that wants to get in your lane and you're not going fast enough. And it's the guy behind you that's not paying attention. It's the guy in front of you. So that's kind of why we were going down this path. Joanne had mentioned she learned in the Presidio, you want to find an area in your neighborhood, not necessarily a parking lot, but somewhere where it's close by to your house that you can get to, that you can practice with minimal traffic as opposed to, you know, cars and backlog and people going fast, so that you can just kind of work on your skills and be in the environment that you're practicing as opposed to being in a parking lot. But, you know, making right turns, being in the left, making a U-turn, all of these things are so much easier if you don't have the stress of a lot of other commuters behind you or in front of you.
Now,
to kind of figure things out.
People will also tell you that you have to know how to drive a stick shift, and that's really not true. They'll also tell you that you need to know how to ride before you take your class. That's also not true. And they'll also tell you other things like, you know, you need this bike to learn, you need that to learn. Let's be honest, you don't really need anything. You basically just need kind of yourself, in a sense.
You need to be in the right mindset.
I mean,
you need
right.
to want to learn.
That too, like, you can't be learning because your boyfriend wants you to, because your girlfriend wants you to, because your husband wants you to. You have to do it because you really want to do it. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't want to do this. I have no desire and I really don't. Sorry, go make some friends, go riding and have a great time and I'll see you at dinner. There's nothing wrong with that.
And I've also met people who took the MSF course or a similar course, dirt or street, and decided, you know what, it wasn't for them. And 10 years later, they changed their mind and went back.
Right. So that brings us to some things that you want to think about So beyond the kind of legality, right? Registration, getting your license, getting your permit, getting all your paperwork in order, that's certainly important. But you also want to think about why you're riding, who you're riding for, just like we kind of mentioned just now, riding for yourself because you want to learn, because it's something that you want to do, not something somebody else wants to do, because you're never going to have fun and you're never really going to learn what you need to learn. And you're never going to advance as far as your experience, your skill set, your techniques. It just, none of it will stick with you. You're going to hate it and you're going to be really unhappy. And who knows, you might become resentful. You might become angry and upset with your person because they've pushed you to do something you never wanted to do in the first place.
And so, accidents happen.
Well,
and then there is a lot of resent.
Well, the risk level. Yeah. I mean, that's a given. We didn't really put, you know, we're not really giving you that as something to look at, but motorcycling as a risk. Yeah. You should certainly consider that and kind of, how are you going to manage it and how are you going to make it so that it's the least risky activity for you? So a few other things to consider before you actually get on that motorcycle. Try to find a bike that matches you, that matches your riding experience. Don't buy a bike just because the person at the dealership said you should, or your buddy said you should, or you think you need something better now, even though you have no idea how to ride. And it sounds really harsh, but you really have to ask yourself, who do you think you are? You've never ridden. Do you really think you can ride a 1,000cc track bike, sport bike that people win races on? Like, really, where do you think, how do you think you're actually going to get so good at riding in such a short amount of time to be able to master a machine that you've never ridden before? Because you have to be able to learn to ride that machine well so you don't kill yourself, so you don't hurt the rider next to you, so you don't hurt me as I'm coming around that blind corner and you don't veer into my lane over the double yellow line. You really have to be honest with yourself. So talk to yourself. Don't buy more bike than you can handle. Mm-hmm. Think about,
because
what do I need?
Because guess what? You buy something used, you sell it again. You use it just for the purpose of understanding the basics and being comfortable, because riding a motorcycle well is all about confidence. It really is about confidence. I couldn't even tell you.
Absolutely.
60%.
Self-esteem.
And getting to that point is very important. You don't want to buy something or ride something that is overwhelming to you. And one of the benefits of taking the state's total control or MSF or whatever your learning class is for the street is that, at least as far as mine was, it wasn't all the same motorcycle. They had some dirt bikes. They had, and they're all street legal. Mm-hmm. They had dirt bikes. They had a
cruisers.
Honda Rebel.
Standards.
A couple different kinds. And so talk to the instructor. If there are a couple of different kinds of motorcycles that are all under 500cc, because that's typically what they train you on, ask them, hey, can I ride that just, you know, 5 minutes just to check it out, just to see how it feels? Because this is probably as close as you're going to get to a test ride.
Probably.
Especially if you don't know, you know, kind of what you're chasing as far as, you know, adventure bike, road, and we'll cover this in a different topic. But just know that bikes are just like cars. You buy them, you sell them. So I personally started off on something below 500cc, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I did not want to think that the bike was going to control me. I wanted to have enough confidence to know that I could control the bike. And I don't think I could have done that if I was on a 1200cc, 800-pound motorcycle.
I also think this greatly applies to those of you who are transitioning. Maybe you've only ridden cruisers for 50 years or whatever, for 5-10 years, mm-hmm. and now you're thinking about getting adventure riding. Just think about how difficult, annoying, challenging, painful it can be to go from a 24-inch seat height to a 32 or a 30, to a totally different style of riding that you've never experienced before. And on top of that, now you have to add 6, maybe 8 inches of seat height that you weren't ready for, because you didn't know that this 600-pound 1200 GS with all these boxes and bags on it is not something designed to help you learn to ride. It's either you ride it or you don't. It's a
different experience.
Right. So you're making your climb up to Mount Everest the most difficult way possible. You're going the steepest, most dangerous, coldest, worst route possible instead of following that wonderful little path they put out for you. You know, you're just adding so much difficulty. And I always tell people that I meet, how hard do you want to make this? Don't you want this to be easy? Like, mm-hmm. Motorcycling's hard. It's not for everybody, but you're just throwing out walls in front of yourself higher and higher, and you're not letting yourself climb over them very quickly. Why? You don't have to do that to yourself. You should take some time and make it super easy, really fun, and great so that you want to ride more because you won't want to.
All the basic things that you learn about a motorcycle don't change. Finding the friction zone, the correct amount of braking, provided we're talking about the same surface. Mm-hmm. However, the difference between riding a fat boy for 20 years, I'm just throwing that out there, a fat boy for 20 years, and then transitioning to, I don't know if fat boys are 1200 cc's, but a 1200 cc Sportster, and then going out and buying the Ducati Multistrada Enduro, huge difference. I can tell you I'm way more comfortable on a fat boy than I am on the Multi Enduro. And that's, right. You know, all for everything that Joanne said, it's the seat height changes, mm-hmm. where the weight distribution now changes, because before you had a bike with a lowered seat, a low seat around 26 or 28, and the weight was closer to the ground. And now you have a bike whose weight is with the gas tank, which is in front of you, which is up high. So don't think that the transition will be seamless and lateral. If you're going to go from something like a cruiser to something that's off-road, you might want to also start a little bit smaller, get a little more comfortable. Hey, for the $200, $300 that they charge for some of these dirt courses, you might be able to find that they have something that's a little higher CC offering. So if you've ridden street for a while, but you're curious about the dirt, don't think that your only option is going to be a WR250. You can ask them, and they will most likely have something that could be a little bit higher in displacement.
So along with kind of riding your own ride and not buying more bike than you can handle and that you're truly ready and experienced for, is to look at some other things like technology, ABS, traction control. Those are certain things that can really help you. I think some would argue that they hinder you. There's a lot of, I think, debates in the riding community about those. If you talk to more experienced riders, they'll probably tell you that electronics may interfere. You'll find other people telling you that electronics are amazing. You know, look into these kinds of things to help you, I think, navigate. I think there's nothing wrong with accessories to help you either be safer or ride safer. But there's a lot of things available today.
That chatter can be more dependent on the difference between using your motorcycle to ride in the street versus using your bike to ride in the dirt, because a lot of things like traction control and ABS will, for some people, cause issues in the dirt, whereas on the street, I really miss ABS. I'm not going to lie. I started out without ABS, but I didn't have a lot of, amazingly, on the bike that I started on, I did not have a lot of emergency situations where I had to effectively brake. But without ABS, it's a really delicate activity. You're not just flooring the front and the rear simultaneously. And each bike is different. Each bike has different weight. Each, you know, mm-hmm. bike has a slightly different brake. So with ABS, you know, hopefully you're using the correct percentage and applying the front and the rear accordingly. But if you're not and you panic, the outcome is going to be far better on a bike with ABS than it is without.
So definitely look at, you know, options like that to help you ride better, feel more comfortable. Along with that is maintenance. When you buy a bike, you should look at it up and down before you even think about riding it, and know what every single button does. know exactly where they are, know how to find them without even looking for them, and know how to switch your fuel on, how to switch it off. Where are your emergency blinkers? Just where are all your controls?
Carbureted versus fuel injected. Pretty critical there.
Well, that's certainly a little more technical in nature.
I ran into that problem with the fuel, knowing where your on and reserve are.
Knowing that.
Definitely not the higher point in my career, right. but
get to know your bike.
Where the horn is. Yeah. I mean,
well,
that programming your finger to find the horn every time you need it in an emergency is also pretty key. Sometimes they're a little tricky.
But just generally knowing like what all the stuff on your bike does. Can you on the fly adjust your preload? Do you know what that does? What are little things on your bike that are specific to your bike that make your ride better? What can you do? How do you get the seat off? Where do you put your insurance and your registration sticker? How do you find the fuse box in case you blow a fuse? Where's your battery in case you need a jump start? You want to dissect your bike and at least know where things are. I'm not saying you need to know how to fix everything, but which position is what? Because it's your bike. And if something happens, you're the only person in that moment to at least try to figure out what's going on, but you're going to ride it and you should know where everything is. So look at your manual. Mm. If you don't have a manual, Google. Mine was free on Google.
Most manuals are fairly decent as far as more recent bikes, but if you want to get into the servicing tech questions, which most manuals will not, because they obviously want you to go to the dealership because that will bring more money in. There are plenty of guides that for about $25 or $30, you can find them off of eBay or anywhere online, that will have your specific year or years if they haven't changed the model. And those kinds of repair guides will be very detailed as far as to how to change a battery or how to change your oil or tighten your chain.
I mean, brand new bikes. I haven't bought a new bike in like a new bike in 15 years, but
never.
My bike had.
I don't know what a new bike smell is like.
I don't know. It's a little underwhelming. when I bought mine, it came with a small manual of very basic things like, here's where your mirrors are, you know, and here's where your turn switch is, and here's the tire pressure you should have on this with these stock tires, which is 40, by the way, which is ridiculous because no one's going to ride that bike with 40 PSI front and rear. It had just very basic things. So it was like a 20-page manual. I think it even had like how to operate your motorcycle. Like it teaches you how to actually ride a motorcycle in a very, you know, 2-page lesson. But I Googled for the Triumph official service manual and I found it and it was free. It's like 300 pages. It's a PDF. Wow. I downloaded it. And now if I want to, I can take apart my engine, but I'm not going to do that. But I downloaded it because I wanted to see more specific things like what's the, you know, torque spec when I put the engine bolts back on after I put frame sliders on, you know, what's just more detailed info just so that I don't have to call somebody and ask them for an answer that I can just look up myself. So Google, you'll find something. If not, ask your dealer. I'm sure they can recommend a manual for you to look at. I don't think any dealer out there is going to say, no, you really shouldn't learn more about your bike. It's a really bad idea. I mean, you know, be honest. It's not like you're going to go out and buy a manual and like revalve your engine. It's not like that. You're just trying to get familiar with it.
That's what YouTube's for.
Right. I mean, most people, they're not going to do that. It's not going to drive business away from the dealer. It's just going to give you a little more info about this motorcycle you just purchased and spent, I don't know, $5, $10, $20,000 on. So,
and of course, a good way to find a good dealer is that's one of your evaluative questions. Is this person only trying to drive business to the dealership, or does this person want to foster the kind of level of customer service such that whenever I need something to buy something that I'm going to come to them? And we'll go over that in a separate podcast. But also something is to have someone that you trust other than the internet that you can ask these kinds of questions to. Everyone wants a friend like that. And if you don't have one, you might be able to find one through us, but you know, most people at what is the Moto Shop? Are they still Moto Guild? Are they still
they're in
different locations?
mostly California.
A lot of gear shops have like bike nights.
There's also a lot of similar
bike nights. Those yeah. are great places to find people because you'll see everyone asking them questions. It's not difficult to find the smartest guy in the room.
There's also a lot of knockoffs of Moto Guild. Sorry, I'm going to say knockoffs because they've been around for 6 years. But there's a lot of other DIY kind of co-op-y motorcycle shops that have popped up around the state. So if you just search in your state, in your city, I'm sure you'll find something. If not, YouTube is there. If not, Google is there for you to read and figure out things if you have to on your own. So certainly some basic maintenance knowledge as far as what are all the things on my bike, where is everything, make sure I know how to operate it and I know what everything does, you know.
Yeah, and before you set off, take a quick look. And I have bikes in a carport, so I don't have a secure garage where I can't prevent someone or something from knocking my mirrors or accidentally knocking something in the way of the tire. So I do a really brief pre-ride inspection. If I haven't ridden in a bit and I'm not daily riding, I will check the tire pressure just to kind of see where that's at. Mirror adjustment as well. Small carport, so I'm always walking around. I'm always bumping into something. And on the Triumph specifically, the mirrors are not totally easy to manipulate. So unless I foresee a stop sign in my future, they're kind of difficult to adjust on the fly. So it's kind of a peeve of mine to always make sure that I have my mirrors adjusted before I leave, because it's a little bit of a pain in the butt to do that while you're riding.
Sounds like you need an upgrade.
Yeah.
I just upgraded mine. I can actually see better. Mine now have blue glass.
Oh.
You know, some cars have like the glass is bluish. It actually makes things easier to see. It's kind of cool, actually.
Getting back to our list of, you know, before you go for a ride in the morning. Also, riding, we're not going to understate it. Riding a motorcycle is dangerous. Everyone tells you that. Mm-hmm. Your grandmother tells you that. Most of your friends, medical professionals occasionally who overstep their bounds also say stuff like that.
You might die, blah, blah, blah.
You know, the reason why we share this kind of information is to provide you with a level of education to start the conversation with someone. And one of those things is that you have to ride defensively. You know, it might be my own level of paranoia, of which I totally admit, but I'm always kind of thinking, yeah, if I just consider everyone's out to get me, not necessarily me in general, but they're not paying attention. Riding in the last 5 years is completely different than riding in the previous 5 years for me. A lot more phones on the road, a lot more text messaging and social media and reasons to lean over and grab something. And so that changes my riding significantly, such that I ride more defensively. And sometimes when I get up and it's 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm not really feeling like I can make it for another 45 minutes with 110% concentration. So those are the days that if you don't feel like you're 110%, because if you're driving a car, I'd say you're probably about 100. If you're riding a motorcycle, you have to be so focused on the task at hand, because you're going to be looking and gauging off of other people around you, as well as the riding conditions that you're in, and constantly adjusting accordingly.
Since we had so much to say on this topic, tune in for the next episode when we will go into greater detail about gear and insurance and other tips and tricks for the beginner rider.